Blog Talk Radio.
Before 9/11, 48 senators voted to burn the flag of the United States of America. 8 were on the Senate Intelligence Committee, headed up by Bob Graham of Florida, Carl Levin of Michigan, Rockefeller, Wyden, Durbin, Evan Bayh, John Edwards, Barbara Mikulski, Fred Thompson, plus Daniel Akaka, Evan Bayh, Robert Bennett, Joe Biden, Jeff Fingerman, Barbara Boxer, Robert Byrd, Maria Cantwell, Gene Carnahan, Thomas Carper, Lincoln Chafee, Hillary Clinton, Ted Cochran, Ken Conrad, John Corzine, Tom Daschle, Christopher Dodd, Byron Dorgan, Dick Durbin, John Edwards, Russell Feingold, Bob Graham, Tom Harkin, Daniel Inouye, James Jeffords, Ted Kennedy, John Kerry, Herb Cole, Mary Landrieu, Patrick Leahy, Carl Levin, Joe Liverwurst, Mitch McConnell, Barbara Mikulski, Patty Murray, Bill Nelson, Don Rickles, Jack Reed, Rockefeller, Paul Sarbanes, Chuck Schumer, Gordon Smith, Arlen Specter, Debbie Stabenow, Fred Thompson, Robert Torricelli, John Warner, Paul Wellstone, and Ron Wyden. 80% of
Hi, you boys and girls. Welcome to the Spirit of America party. The recording goes on to say 80% of flag burners are baby killers. Now, speaking of baby killers, the Supreme Court that gave us the right to kill our children has now screwed us into the ground for the Obama administration. And everybody's upset that a guy named Roberts, Mr. Roberts, who was no Mr. Roberts, has dealt us a dirty deck of cards. And a guy who was appointed by Bush, and we all thought he was a conservative, has now turned around, and he has screwed the Constitution he took an oath for. And everybody will be debating, and everybody will be hugging and going, what for, and let's form another committee, and let's do a book, and let's hear some have some hearings. And that 2,700-page medical bill that nobody read is now the law of the land. And Americans are, to put it mildly, I'm going to say ticked off, but you know what I really want to say. And so there we are between a rock and a hard place. And this president is closing in on his Mongolian dynasty. He is going to reign longer than Genghis Khan. Unbelievable. Can you believe it? Can you believe what's happened to us as a country? A guy came out of nowhere and took over the country. A guy named George Soros spends tens of million dollars a day to undermine the United States, and we say, give us more. Do more to us. Yes. There used to be a cry, and no taxation without representation. And now it's taxation throughout the nation. So I want to give you a little preview on what's coming, because you lost your country and you're never getting it back. And the phones are going off the hook at Mike Savage's show, because he predicted that Roberts was going to double-cross the conservatives. And they're all calling to tell him that they used to doubt him, but they will never doubt him again. And isn't it funny? This is the only talk show host that's banned in Britain. Who is afraid of him so much that they would have him banned in Britain? What do they figure, that he's going to have to flee the country and they want to make sure he can't get into England? You lost your country and you're not going to get it back. And I'm going to tell you right now that this guy has a game plan that was probably rehearsed in the Soviet Union. And you're losing your liberties and you don't know it and you don't care. What you're concerned about is how much dope you can smoke this weekend. And because you're in that state of narcolepsy, you're going to wake up one day and Russian and Chinese troops are going to be directing traffic outside your house. And you say that can never happen. Well, watch how they take down the U.S. military. They've already sissified it, and now they're going to cut it to shreds. And I'll tell you right now, your guns will be confiscated, and they're going to run a test case on one state, and that state is Arizona. They're going to create a situation where they call for the martial law, and they will confiscate everybody's guns, and the IRS will also be in on it. If you fall behind on your bills, they'll come and confiscate your guns too. But they intend to use one state as a test case, and they're going to do. They've got it in for Arizona. So all you people out in Arizona, you better start talking to the Apaches and find out where they hid their weapons and do the same, because they're coming for your guns, and they're going to create a border incident where some rancher kills a Mexican, and that'll be the excuse, because we have vigilantes running amok, and we have to confiscate everybody's guns for their own protection. And so once you see the beginning of the new Soviet Union and the 50 states that are now part of the Balkans, you will come to realize you've been had, and it'll be too late. It'll just be a question of who kills you first. But you're scheduled for death, and so is your family. And so I'm going to give you a little treat. I'm going to introduce you to a guy that was the master of death camps, so you get an idea, a preview of coming attractions. This guy's name is Leventi Beria. And Jimmy from Brooklyn called me the other day, and he read me a one-pager about all of the tactics that Leventi Beria used in acquiring countries for the Soviet bloc. And every one of the tactics that Leventi Beria used has already been used on us as Americans, and we don't even know it. Why not? Because we don't know the difference between our tuchus and our elbow. We're waiting for the other guy to do something, and the other guy is waiting for you. So think about that, and here's Leventi Beria.
Welcome to the Spirit of America Party and the Spirit of America Party book and the Spirit of America Party radio show. A bartender, champagne, and a giraffe of wine.
go. We're going to start reading the good book. We're going to check blogs, and we're going to see what's happening. So hang in there. We'll dig up some blogs. Somebody sent me these comments. I'm going to share them with you. Warren Buffett, in an interview with CNBC, said he could end the deficit in 5 minutes.
We'll meet again. Don't know when. Don't know when. But I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
That says that any time there is a deficit of more than 3% of gross domestic product, all sitting members of Congress are ineligible for re-election. I know somebody's got a better one. They say you should be allowed to do only 4 years of office followed by 4 years of jail. The 26th Amendment granting the right to vote for 18-year-olds took only 3 months and 8 days to be ratified. Why? Simple. The people demanded it. That was in 1971, before computers, email, cell phones, etc. Of the 27 amendments to the Constitution, 7 took 1 year or less to become the law of the land. All because of public pressure. So Warren is asking each addressee to forward this email to a minimum of 20 people. Congressional Reform Act of 2012. 1. No tenure, no pension. A congressman / woman collects a salary while in office and receives no pay when they're out of office. I'm for that. A Congress, past and present and future, participates in Social Security. All funds in the Congressional Retirement Fund move to the Social Security system immediately. All future funds flow into the Social Security system, and Congress participates with the American people, and it may not be used for any other purpose. 3, Congress can purchase their own retirement plan just as all Americans do. 4, Congress will no longer vote themselves a pay raise. Congressional pay will rise by the lower of CPI or 3%. Congress loses their current health care system and participates in this health care system as the American people, the same one. All contacts with past and present congressmen and women are void, or contracts are void after effect of 12/1/12. The American people did not make this contract with congressmen and women. Hold on.
That was Jimmy from Brooklyn. He just called me, and he was going over the tactics of Leventi Beria. Leventi Beria is the founder of the NKVD. He was one of Stalin's fair-haired boys. Stalin told Roosevelt that Leventi Beria was his Heinrich Himmler. How's that, huh? How's that for being compared? So I'm going to do a little research on Leventi Beria, and I'm going to share it with you. And one of the things that Jimmy read was that Leventi Beria's tactics was to infiltrate groups, undermine them, gain control of them, and turn them into full-fledged communists. So here's a little background on Leventi Pavlovich Beria, courtesy of Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia. Send him a donation. He's Georgian. He was born on the 29th of March, 1899, and he died on the 23rd of December, in 1953. He was a Marshal of the Soviet Union and State Security Administrator, Chief of the Soviet Security and Secret Police Apparatus, NKVD, under Stalin during World War II, and Deputy Premier in the post-war years, 46 to 53. Beria was the longest-lived and most influential of Stalin's secret police chiefs, wielding his most substantial influence during and after World War II. He simultaneously administered vast sections of the Soviet state and served as de facto marshal of the Soviet Union in command of the NKVD field units responsible for anti-partisan operations on the Eastern Front during World War II, as well as for acting as barrier troops and the apprehension of thousands of turncoats, deserters, cowards, and suspected malingerers. Oh, won't our people be happy when he comes to power again? Beria administered the vast expansion of the Gulag labor camps and was primarily responsible for overseeing the secret defense institutions known as Sheraskas. Critical to the war effort, he also played the decisive role in coordinating the Soviet partisans, developing an impressive intelligence and sabotage network behind German lines. He attended the Yalta Conference with Stalin, who introduced him to U.S. President Roosevelt as our Himmler. After the war, he organized the communist takeover of the countries of Central Europe and Eastern Europe. Beria's uncompromising ruthlessness in his duties and skill at producing results culminated in his success in overseeing the Soviet atom bomb project. Stalin gave it absolute priority, and the project was completed in under 5 years, in no small part due to the Soviet espionage against the West organized by Beria's NKVD. That means Soviet espionage against the West means dealing with American traitors. Beria was promoted to first deputy premier when he carried out a brief campaign of liberalization. There's that communist word, liberal, again. He was briefly a part of the ruling troika with Georgi Malenkov and Vyacheslav Molotov. Beria's overconfidence in his position after Stalin's death led him to misjudge the feelings of his associates, many of whom still had relatives in his prisons. In addition, his proposals to free East Germany and normalize relations with the USA alarmed other Politburo members, especially in the wake of the 1953 East German uprising, which was put down only after the invasion by Soviet troops. During the coup d'etat led by Nikita Khrushchev and assisted by the military forces of Marshal Georgi Zhukov, they formed an alliance to remove and kill Beria. In the same year, he was arrested on false charges of treason by Zhukov's soldiers during a meeting in which the full Politburo condemned him. The compliance of the NKVD was ensured by Zhukov's troops, and after interrogation, Beria was taken to the basement of the Lubyanka and shot by General Patel Batitsky, along with his most associated trustees. Beria was born out of wedlock. He was a member of the Georgian Mingrelian ethnic group and grew up in a Greek Orthodox family. Beria's mother, Marta Ivanovna, was a deeply religious church-going woman, and she spent so much time in church she died there. She was previously married and widowed before marrying Beria's father, Pavel Kukachevich Beria, a landowner from Abkhazia, Georgia. He also had a brother, a name unknown, and a sister named Anna. She was born deaf-mute. In his biography, he mentioned only his sister and his niece, implying that his brother was either dead or had no relationship with Beria when he left Merkuli. Beria was educated at a technical school and joined the Bolsheviks in 1917. While a student in the Baku Polytechnicum, now known as the Azerbaijan State Oil Company, as a student, Beria distinguished himself in mathematics and the sciences, but was considered cunning and devious. The Polytechnicum's curriculum was mostly about the petroleum industry. Beria hedged his bets by also working for the anti-Bolshevik Mossavets in Baku. After the city's capture in April 1920, Beria was saved from execution only because there was no time to arrange it, and Sergei Kirov saved him. While in prison, he fell in love with Nina Gekechkun, his cellmate's niece, and they eloped on a train. She was 17, a trained scientist from an aristocratic family. In 1919, when he was 20 years old, he started his career in state security. He was hired by the Secret Service of the Azerbaijan Democratic Republic while still a student at the Polytechnicum in 1920 and 1929. Beria joined the Cheka, the original Bolshevik secret police, and at a time a Bolshevik revolt took place and the Menshevik controlled the Democratic Republic of Georgia and the Red Army subsequently invaded. The Cheka was heavily involved in the conflict, which resulted in the defeat of the Mensheviks and the formation of the Georgian SSR. By 1922, Beria was deputy head of the Georgian branch of Cheka's successor, the OGPU. In 1924, he led the repression of a Georgian nationalist uprising, after which up to 10,000 people were executed. For this display of Bolshevik ruthlessness, Beria was appointed head of the secret political division of the Trans-Caucasian OGPU and was awarded the Order of the Red Banner. In 1926, Beria became head of the Georgian OGPU and was introduced to fellow Georgian Joseph Stalin by Sergio Orhondekidze, head of the Trans-Caucasian Party. As a result, Beria became an ally in Stalin's rise to power. During his years at the helm of the Georgian OGPU, Beria effectively destroyed the intelligence networks that Turkey and Iran had developed in the Soviet Caucasus, while successfully penetrating the governments of these countries with his agents. He also took over Stalin's holiday security. Beria was appointed secretary of the Communist Party in Georgia in 1931, and the whole Trans-Caucasian region in 1932. He became a member of the Central Committee of the Communist Party in 1934. During this time, he began to attack fellow members of the Georgian Communist Party, particularly in Gaius Deidarani, who was Minister of Education of the Georgian SSR. Beria ordered the execution of Devdariarani's brothers, George and Shalva, who held important positions in the Cheka and the Communist Party, respectively. Eventually, Gaius Devdarani was charged with violating Article 58 for alleged counter-revolutionary activities and was executed in 1938 by orders of the NKVD Troika. Yeah, you didn't make too many mistakes back in those days. Tizian Tabit, Sandro Akmelti, Yevgeny Mikhaladze, Dmitry Shevardnadze, George Ilyava, Grigo Tessatelli, and many others. Okay. He purged. Many non-political working people were also arrested and executed without trial. Although he publicly supported Stalin's efforts to purge the Georgia Party apparatus, Beria had little to gain. The purge affected all aspects of the Soviet state. So hang in there, and we'll take a break. And now you know more about Leventi Beria than you ever knew. And you're going to say, why am I listening to this? And I'm going to say, because what is happening in Georgia in 1934 is happening in the USA today. And we have our Leventi Beria. His name is Eric Holder, comrade. We'll take a music break. And if you think Hollywood is the arts, man, you have no idea what's going on in your country. Bartender, a champagne.
Oh,
back to Leventi Beria, the Chuck Schumer of Russia. Yeah. This guy was in with all of Stalin's purges. And just to give you an example, on the 5th of March in 1940, Beria sent a note to Stalin, which he stated that the Polish prisoners of war camps, kept at war camps, and prisoners in Western Belarus and the Ukraine were enemies of the Soviet Union and recommended their execution. Most of them were military officers, but there were also intelligentsia, doctors and priests, for a total of 22,000, and with Stalin's approval, Beria and his NKVD liquidated them in the Katyn Forest Massacre. Took them in, out into the woods and shot them all. Wiped out the entire Polish officer corps in 1940. We weren't even in the war yet. And then he had a new purge, and he got promoted because he was the best purger in town. And he mobilized millions of people imprisoned in gulag camps into wartime production. He took control of the manufacture of armaments, and with 53, Stalin was preparing to do what Hitler did to the Jews. And got about around that time, Abakumov was replaced by Simon Ignatieff, who further intensified the anti-Semitic campaign. On 13th of January 1953, see, Stalin was warming up to it before he got his stroke. The biggest anti-Semitic affair in the Soviet Union was initiated with an article in Pravda, that's like our New York Times, that began what came to be known as the Doctor's Plot, in which a number of the country's prominent Jewish physicians were accused of poisoning top Soviet leaders and arrested concurrently. As anti-Semitic propaganda campaign began, euphemistically termed it the struggle against ruthless cosmopolitanism. Boy, the Soviets really know how to do it, don't they? You know who does do it? The Democrat Party. They do a lot of this. And it occurred in the Soviet press. Initially, 37 men were arrested, but the number quickly grew into hundreds. Scores of Soviet Jews were dismissed from their jobs, arrested, sent to the gulag, or executed. It is alleged that at the time, on Stalin's orders, the MGB started to prepare to deport all Soviet Jews to the Russian Far East or even massacre them. The issue of how much Stalin and Beria were involved in the Doctor's Plot is still disputed. Oh, we didn't learn that when we got the Venona Papers. Some historians claim that no such deportation was planned, or that the planned deportations were in early planning stage and when abandoned. Days after Stalin's death on March the 5th, that should be a Jewish holiday, Beria, along with Mikoyan, correctly foresaw the victory of Mao Zedong in the Chinese Civil War, and greatly helped the communist success by letting the Communist Party of China use Soviet-occupied Manchuria as a staging area and arranging huge weapon shipments to the People's Liberation Army. And then came Stalin's death. Now, Jimmy from Brooklyn says, to all of this, the Soviet Union, when the wall came down, the Soviet Union played weak. And we went around patting ourselves on the back. And now the Soviet Union is stronger and getting stronger every day. At his arrest in June of 1953, a significant number of rape and sexual assault allegations were brought to light. The 2000 unsealing of the Soviet archives of his case revealed amounts of evidence from dozens of victims of his sexual assaults that Stalin had been collecting for years prior to his death. Prior to 2002, available historical accounts noted that Beria had a notorious reputation that almost certainly had some foundation. Once released, the full body of official evidence against Beria, in the words of Stalin's biographer Simon Sebag Montefiore, reveals a sexual predator who used his power to indulge himself in obsessive depravity. Beria would take women to his soundproof office and rape them after dinner. Beria's bodyguards reported that their orders included handing each girl a flower bouquet as she left Beria's house, with the implication being that to accept his parting gift made her a consensual mistress. Those who refused risked being arrested. In one incident reported by Colonel Sarkisov, a woman who had been brought there to Beria refused his advances and ran out of the office. Sarkisov mistakenly handed her the flowers anyway, prompting the enraged Beria to declare, "Now it's not a banquet, it is a wreath. May it rot on your grave." The woman was arrested by the NKVD the next day. Many women reported submitted to Beria's advantage in exchange for the promise of freeing their relatives from the gulag. In one case, Beria picked up a well-known actress under the pretense of bringing her to perform for the Politburo. He took her to his dacha, promising to free her father and grandmother from NKVD prison if she submitted, and then raped her, telling her, "Scream or not, it doesn't matter," and Beria knew her relatives had already been executed several months before. Then she was arrested shortly and sentenced to solitary confinement in the gulag, but she survived. He's a real nasty guy. Isn't that wonderful? So, what has this got to do with us? It's got everything to do with us. Our country is under siege by international communism. Russia and China are allies, have always been allies. They are not divided. Russia is playing us for a fool, and so is China. And they own too many politicians. What are we going to do about it? Well, we're going to throw Obama out of office and let him take all his Soviet accomplices with him. We were talking about an Army Sergeant Vela who was given 10 years in prison for unpremeditated murder. And the story was that he was part of a sniper team. Their area was about to be discovered by a guy walking by. The officer in charge jumped the guy walking by, pinned him to the ground, ordered Vela to shoot him in the head. And the sniper team was staking out a village, and didn't want to give away their location. Okay, so whatever the judgment call was for the officer, he gave a direct order to Vela, and Vela followed the order. Okay, all believing their lives were in danger. Then the three of them were brought to the States for a court martial, and the commanding officer was found not guilty, and another. A unit member was found not guilty, and Vela was then returned to Iraq to be charged in an Iraqi court, where he was sentenced to 10 years in prison, and he has done 5 so far, and nobody is helping this guy. And he's not alone. And I'm sure that with this media that would cover up the murder of 22 SEALs from SEAL Team 6 and 8 other military guys in a chopper crash, okay, a phone-ahead ambush, I believe that there are a lot of guys rotting in prison that have no representation. Vela's wife is already in hock for $177,000 in legal fees. Okay? And he's lost his pension and he's lost his military pay. And he's sitting in a prison for 5 years without pay. Okay? So I was trying to remember another guy who I championed, and his name escaped me, but I've just found him again. And his name is Lieutenant Michael Behenna. Now, here's another one that's uncanny. He got 25 years, and here's the story on this one. Let me see if I can give it to you. It's nice and simple. September 2007, First Lieutenant Michael Behenna deployed to Iraq for his first tour of combat. On April 21st, 2008, Al-Qaeda operatives attacked Lieutenant Behenna's platoon. The IED attack resulted in the death of 2 of Lieutenant Behenna's platoon members, 2 Iraqi citizens, and wounding 2 additional soldiers under Lieutenant Behenna's command. And during the interview, Mansour attacked Behenna and killed Mansour. July 2008, the U.S. Army charged Lieutenant Behenna with premeditated murder for the death of the Al-Qaeda operative and the terrorist Ali Mansour. And then his trial began on February the 23rd, 2009. Defense experts testified that Mansour was standing. Lieutenant Behenna's testimony that Mansour was reaching for his gun was impossible based on the evidence, despite knowing that their own expert witness had told them it was the only logical explanation. Later that Friday night, a military panel of 7 officers, none of whom had combat experience, convicted Lieutenant Behenna of unpremeditated murder. That's the second GI that's been convicted of unpremeditated murder that I know about. And an assault. After Lieutenant Behenna was convicted, but before sentencing, Dr. McDonald sent an email to the prosecution team requesting that the information provided in his demonstration be turned over to the defense. A mistrial. He was an excellent officer. He received his call to serve his country while attending the University of Central Oklahoma. He's from a family of public servants, his mother being an assistant United States attorney and his father a retired special agent with the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation. He has served the Army and the United States with honor and dignity. And to sacrifice the life of this Oklahoma soldier over the death of a known terrorist is a breach of faith with all who are serving our country. You're going to see more of that. But they got plenty of time for gay pride parades. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They got plenty of time for happy horse crap. So say a little prayer for Sergeant Avila and Lieutenant Behenna, and God knows who else is rotting away in Fort Leavenworth because they're too American. You think about that. So let me give you a tune.
We'll meet again. Don't know where. Don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
Bad news. Let me just put it bluntly. Anything that has to do with the UN is bad news. And what it is, it's a scheme designed to take more money from American taxpayers and spread it around to whoever the UN decides to give it to. See, they're watching the U.S. government here. They're trying to copy their Ponzi scheme. I got a fax that there's 20 Republicans who are not opposed to this Law of the Sea treaty. Now, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to read you the names, and it should make you sick. And it proves what I've always thought about a couple of these guys. All right? Lamar Alexander, Kelly Ayotte, Scott Brown. Scott Brown was a big mistake. We would have been better off electing a Democrat in Democrat in Massachusetts. Thad Cochran is a flag burner. And he's probably a baby killer. 40 days before 9-1-1, he voted to burn the flag. Susan Collins, I call her one of the Cauldron sisters, and Olympia Snow is in this mix too. These people, if this is the best that Maine has, Maine should set the whole state on fire. Bob Corker, don't know who he is, but he's in there. Michael Enzi, don't know who he is, but he's in there. And this guy, I never trusted. And I'll tell you why I never trusted him. His name is, I call him Linseed Graham. Linseed Graham wanted to make an example out of a private in Iraq because the private fought back in the war. And Linseed Graham assured everybody that he would give that private justice. I think Linseed Graham should go on a scout patrol. Charles Grassley, I'm sorry to hear that, Mr. Grassley. I really am. Kay Bailey Hutchinson, she's a sneak. I think she's pro-choice. If she's not, she's in the closet of pro-choice. Johnny Isaacson, I don't know him. Mike Johans, don't know him. Mark Kirk, don't know him. Richard Lugar, I do know Richard Lugar. Never trusted him and never liked him. He looks too snaky to me. I bet you that somebody has to wipe up the oil on the floor as they walk behind him. John McCain, you've broken my heart. You've broken my heart, John McCain. And you know what? You ditched Arizona. You ditched them. You turned them all over to drug runners. You had 25 years as a senator in Arizona, and you never stopped one drug buy. Mitch McConnell. I call him Match McConnell because he is one of 8 Republicans who voted to burn the flag. Mitch McConnell cannot be trusted. You cannot trust a flag burner. Lisa Murkowski, every time I see her name is a dirty deed attached to it. Rob Portman, I don't know. Olympia Snowjob, I do know. And sad to see Patrick Toomey in this list. Sad to see Patrick Toomey in this list. So if you want to know who your friends are, the names I just gave you aren't your friend. And they want to get jobs with the New World Order when the United States falls. They can all teach their grandmother to suck eggs. So
hang in there, boys and girls, and let's see if Bette Davis can sum up her feelings for these guys who work for the UN. Didn't work. Okay. I thought I had upped it last night, but apparently it didn't take. Okay. So, what do you want to do? You want to zoom a little? President, every band has to have a saxophone player. No more of this one guy with a guitar coming out and smoking up the place.
Here's a tune that's banned by Mayor Mohammed of Bloomingdale in New York. He banned sugar, and he banned assault. And then when the temperature went to 98, he reminded everybody to take their assault tablets. More troops are being deployed to Afghanistan to fight with one hand tied behind their back and the threat of a court-martial if you kill the enemy. Over 800 troops from the Alabama National Guard, and we got a president that hates the entire South. 150 troops from the Utah National Guard, and all we get from the media is Mormon jokes. 300 troops deploying out of Fort Benning, Georgia. And black farmers in Georgia always get the shaft. What else have we got? The 173rd Airborne Brigade Combat Team is training for deployment. 3,000 troops from Fort Riley, Kansas, now set to deploy. 2,950 troops from the 101st Airborne are set to leave Kentucky. And the best we can send to Washington from Kentucky is Match McConnell. Pray for these guys. Pray for these troops. Pray that God watches over them. Pray for their families. Pray that they can live on the money they're making, while the Congress aligns its pockets with big expense accounts and insider trading. Yes, we're in trouble. And this looks like a lot of troops are going overseas. Whether they're not telling us that there's a Taliban surge? Well, we'll soon find out. There's a Marine general that's going to Pakistan to cry that they're sending too many terrorists into Afghanistan and to knock it off. Or else we'll protest to the UN. What else we got here? Hillary Clinton and the Muslim Brotherhood connection. You want to know about that? I can tell you. That's from the Tea Party. Hillary Clinton takes a village to wipe out an American soldier. Hillary tied to the new Muslim Brotherhood. Oh, yeah, I know this story. Wait till you hear this one. Saleh Mahmoud Abedin, the mother of Hillary Clinton's chief of staff, reportedly served in the women's division of the Muslim Brotherhood alongside the wife of Egypt's new president, the Brotherhood's Mohammed Mursi, who shows no mercy. And WorldNet Daily previously exposed Abedin represented a Muslim charity known to have spawned terror groups, including one declared by the U.S. government to be an official al-Qaeda front. And they also announced yesterday they got 100 Muslim terrorists in the U.S. military, and they don't know who they are. But they know it's 100. WorldNet Daily is also reporting that Clinton spoke at Aberdeen's Assorted Women's College, where she was introduced by Abedin alongside the Islamic activist daughter Huma, who serves as Clinton's chief of staff. At the speech, Clinton praised Saleh's pioneering work. Huma Abedin is also the mother-in-law of disgraced former Pride of New York Representative Anthony Weasel, Democrat, New York. Dirty Democrat. He's a double D Democrat.
How is Huma Abedin connected to Egypt's new president by Walid Shubat and Ben Barak? Well, we already know, Walid, you're late with the information. So, that's what's going on in the good old USA. We are infiltrated six different ways to Sunday. We're being sold. The only thing, we're not there physically on the auction block, thanks to the internet. They can sell you out right on the, with the ones and zeros. Obama praises Islamist takeover. Yes, Obama praises Islamist takeover. Former Supreme Court clerks think the mandate is done for. Let's hope they're right. Yep. And I just hope we don't get an executive order that all the women have to wear burqas. So here's the story. President Obama called Morsi Sunday evening. Boy, he didn't wait long, huh? I wonder if he calls Yitzhak Rabin that quickly. Will he call Yitzhak to tell him Egyptian troops are massing on the border? I don't think so. No, that'll be the second movie. First, I got bin Laden, and the second one, I got Israel. President Obama called Morsi Sunday evening, telling him the United States would stand by Egypt in its transitional period, and said that he looked forward to working together, and he probably should have said, and we also got Gaddafi for informing on you. We look forward to working together with President-elect Morsi and the government he forms on the basis of mutual respect to advance that many shared interests between Egypt and the United States. Oh yeah, everybody's lining up to go tour the pyramids. And not only that, Obama has promised Egypt that every Wednesday they will get chocolate pudding. Morsi is a member of the Islamic Muslim Brotherhood Party, and he was the winner of the election Sunday. But the Egyptian military is reluctantly giving up. Oh, and I got a picture of my congressman, and his head is on a chicken, and Congressman Grimm is chickening out on protecting consumers. Tell him stop the egg bill, keep food affordable. Why do these politicians get involved in so much silly Shiite? Here's somebody that says, I'm a conservative Catholic. I was raised in the beautiful state of Montana. After two tours in the armed forces, I settled in the southeast. I have traveled and visited 45 states. I haven't been as fortunate to travel all 57 states, like Barack Hussein Obama stated he had. I couldn't find seven of those states, and I can't read the rest because they won't let me see it. He's probably they've probably got a Pac-Man eating his story. Once again, you can spot an old coyote with the billions of dollars we give to the Israeli terrorists. Oh, this must be written by a radical Seventh-day Adventist. A time to cut the umbilical cord. Remember the USS Liberty bombing of our vessel by the Israelis? They used our dollars on a vile, vicious attack to bomb our ship. What should we do? Should we let them stand alone against a billion Arabs? Would that satisfy you? Would you be happy? Would it be better they weren't there and then we would have peace? And then after they were gone, would it be better if that everybody gave up their weapons in the United States so we could have peace? And then we could all go to the gas chambers quietly and die for peace. Yeah. You know what you could do? You need a date with the fat lady's burqa. Yeah. Give me a break. Man. Hate groups. You know what you got to watch? You got to go to the Huffington Post when they have a blog. And if it's anything that's anti-American, their first 200 blogs are all in sympathy with that anti-American, and then you go down to 201, and there'll be a guy that says, listen, I'm for the Constitution. I'm a conservative Catholic. Well, I read that one already. My post was not anti-Christian or anti-Catholic, and I'm not a Zionist or Obama supporter or a Democrat.
And then he goes on to attack a guy named Victor Magic. Yep. Victor, I'm a conservative. I am a war hero and served 20 years in the military. This is Ron Moore posting from Israel, wrote. I am a war hero and posting 20-plus years in the military. Every time I've been to Tel Aviv, there's a wonderful reminder of New York City in many ways. But Tel Aviv has a beautiful Mediterranean beach with beautiful people using it. Lots of luck, or lots of laughs. The yarmulke never had a propeller on it. Why have you people kept Jesus, the Christ Messiah, on the cross? Why do you pray to Mary when the Bible says clearly Christians are to pray in the name of Jesus? Why do people imagine going to confession, then going out and committing the same sins all over again? Because it's a weekly thing. Speaking of work, why do you people emphasize works over salvation by grace through faith? Why did your people conduct the Inquisition, conquer by the sword? I got a feeling this man is a Muslim. Why do your people worship the apostles, making false idols to them to hang on your rearview mirrors or sit on your dashboards? Why do you people give Muslims good reason for saying you worship multiple gods? Why do your priests molest boys and your bishops, other higher-ups in the hierarchy, try to cover up their crimes? The questions continue ad infinitum. Well, dear ad infinitum, let's go to the subject of who molests boys and bishops. I know a sultan who likes young boys, and he is still in power. Huh? And he is a Muslim, and he's a good Muslim. Yes, as far as statues go, we will always have Saint Christopher, who is the patron saint of travelers, on our dashboards. And we also pray to Saint Joseph, because he is a father, and he's a father who gets little recognition. And we favor fathers. And the apostles, if you ever read the lives of the apostles, I think you would be a little bit startled. Everyone died a martyr. Everyone died for Christ. And why do we worship Mary? Because she is a woman, and she is a beautiful woman. And all men love beautiful women, especially when that beautiful woman is your mother. And Jesus said, or the Bible says, the Ten Commandments say, honor thy father and thy mother. They don't say just honor thy father. And maybe if you treated women a little bit better, you would not have to go to paradise for 72 virgins who are all men. Yeah. And that's my answer to you, Charlie. So, let me take a break.
Okay.
Reaches out to offer peace.
national religion in there, we could all use. And it would be nice to see a few extra dollars in the collection as it passes my position in the pew. I see a lot of people making the blackjack sign. You know, they clap their hands and they show they have no money when the second basket comes around. How about that we double God's cut, because these churches are hurting. You don't think the Catholic Church would love to have a private school for every man, woman, and child in the United States? Don't you think that a private education is better than what they're teaching in the state-run schools? Do you know you lose your child in the fifth grade? He's no longer, or she's no longer your child. Don't you know that in the state-run schools? Do you know what they teach in the Catholic schools? Honor thy father and thy mother and give them no problems. And when I went to school, they used to, after the nuns got finished beating you up, you went home and told your parents, and they beat you up. Today, they're all down there with their lawyers after they throw the kid on some hard cobblestones and say, look what the nun did to him, or look what the teacher did to him. And the principals are hiding in the office. They're afraid to come out because somebody's going to beat them up. It's really wonderful. It's absolutely fantastic when the way we have taken ourselves down as a nation. 27th in education, and you know what they want to do? They want to raise more taxes to give more money to get better teachers. What happened to the teachers that we already had? Oh, they all retired. You got to pay their pensions. Oh, isn't that wonderful? Well, here's a guy that's saying, this is the Rainy Day Patriot on the Supreme Court, a decision today. Obamacare is now Obama tax. My friends, we are in deep trouble. We are in deep trouble. And you know what? I worry about the old people. Not because they're going to get cut out of the benefits for Medicaid, and that the doctors will be carrying pistols to dispatch anybody over 65 under government regulation. I'm not worried about that. I'm not worried that I'm not going to get the best treatment, because I've been there. I've been to the mountain, and I know when you ride off into the sunset, the cameras get real dark. But that's all right. I can live with it. And I know there are old people out there right now that are saying, I'm glad I lived when I lived. And there are old people out there giving up, saying, you can't beat these people. The country is gone. Don't do it. Don't do it. You know why? You've got a naive generation that doesn't know what's coming for them. They have no idea what's going to happen to them. And they got kids. And those little innocents are going to be, they're going to be cannon fodder. They're going to be slaves in the land of the free. And so don't give up. With your last breath, make sure that these bastards all get punished. Vote them out. The ballot is our bullet. And when the government goes totalitarian, the bullet will be our ballot. So, and don't give up. And don't let them take your guns away. And everybody should be buying more. And every woman should be learning how to shoot or to protect their children. And every American woman should be having another baby. Strike a blow for freedom. Have a baby. So, I'm only kidding you. I know you can't afford it. You got to go to Atlantis this year. Yeah. You think about the generation that there were guys standing in line across from the Empire State Building in 1934 with no money in their pockets. They got up and they went out and stood on a line in 1934 while 4,000, I think it was 4,000 guys built the Empire State Building, and they were waiting for one of those 4,000 guys to fall off so they could go and apply for the job. You think about that, and then tell me how tough you got it. You think about that. You got a mayor that has nothing to do but ban salt. Yeah, and next he'll be banning snow because he has no salt. We're all in trouble. We're all in trouble. We've lost our country, and we're not going to get it back. And if Obama gets a second term, you can kiss your ass goodbye. And you know who's going to cry the most? The liberals, because they're the ones that get executed first. All the crybabies get put into cattle cars. I know my rights. Yes, you'll be saying that when you're getting a rifle butt in the back of the head and they're taking your watch and your wife. God help you. You have no idea what's coming. You have no idea what's coming. And you'll be listening to John the Monkey telling you jokes. And Bill Maher will be doing interviews as you go to the death camps. So let's see if we can find a nice tune for you here. Oh, I got mail.
You got mail.
You have mail waiting to be sent. Oh, that must be my hate mail I'm sending out tonight. Yeah. And dear President Obama, go back to Kenya where you came from. Yeah, give us a break. Search for six-year-old ends in tragedy. Oh, yeah, you see this every day now. It's a common occurrence in the United States. Children, you know what? I got to tell you something. It all comes down to abortion. When one life is not sacred, no life is sacred. And there are more crimes against women today than ever before. It is so bad that in the cases of rape, that the colleges have watered them down to date rape.
Oh, yeah, she came on to him.
Yeah, she came on. She slowed down. She slowed down from her 25-mile-an-hour escape route. Yeah, escape run. Give me a break, man. Give me a break. What are we going to do? You're breaking my heart. That's what you're doing. Listen to how this guy takes it.
And it isn't too easy believing that you'd leave after all we've been through. It's breaking my heart to remember the dreams we depended upon. When you go, I wish you joy. Though teardrops burn, but if someday you should want to return, please hurry back and we'll make a new start. But till then,
1,200,000 abortions in the country a year. 1,200,000 divorces a year. You think there's any correlation? Just a coincidence. I think it's a coincidence. How's that? Why are men voting pro-choice? What have they got to do with it? What, they were a donor? Do they give the girl taxi money to get to go to the clinic and back? Or they just give, is it one way? Yeah. There is a racist leader from another race, and he got a girl in trouble. And he was a married man. And he was out protesting a candlelight vigil for a murderer who was being executed, and he was against the death penalty, and his mistress was in an abortion clinic getting rid of Junior. Now, how do you like that? Huh? What do you call that? Is that like a hypocrite mania? I got a picture of two Democrats kissing. They're two hippopotamus. Hippopotami. Yeah. And it says hypocrites. You know the difference between a Republican and a Democrat when they get caught stealing? The Republican says, I didn't do it. And the Democrat says, you can't prove it. So, tonight, love hurts. And we're all up the fat lady's burka. And we're spinning into a big deficit. Everybody's house is underwater. Nobody recovered from the stock market crash in 2009. And now Obama is an emir. He's ruling like an emir. So here is Love Hurts. Jerry Sandusky is getting a pension of $59,000 a year while he's in prison from Penn State. Who pays for that? Somebody's tuition money is going to take care of Jerry. And those two GIs that are rotting in jail, How come they lost their pension? Why shouldn't they be getting a pension? What did they do? They were working on the job. They were doing their duty as they were taught. Why shouldn't they be getting a pension? Why should they lose their pension benefits? When I opened up the show tonight, I started with the Star Spangled Banner. If you listen carefully, you could hear it was a vinyl record. It's the cast of World War II. It was recorded just before D-Day. There's 47 scratches in the record. Each scratch represents 8,000 Americans who died in World War II. You think about that while you watch your country going down the drain, and you're going to vote for the guy that's going to put you to death. You don't believe that because you don't think it can happen. You haven't seen anything yet. They got all the borders open. They got all the doors open. They're inviting everybody to come kill us. They're putting border guards in jail when they're not shooting them and covering up their murder. You have no idea what's coming. And the drug man has your name and address. And if he don't get you, he's going to get your kids. And if you don't believe me, go out to Hollywood and ask all of those big actors out there to donate to the A Party of Death. How many of their kids are in rehab? If there's money, the drug man is coming to see you. And every time you light up a joint, you kill a Mexican. You think about that. You don't see the correlation. You won't see a bullet that takes your life either. And one day, there will be one with your name on it, and it'll be made in Russia, China, or Iran. Talk to you. Have a nice night.